It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And our local numbers, 247-7282 and 353-4674, all those are open to you right now. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben.
You announced last week that we were going to talk about homeowners associations issues today.
We are. We are here. Good morning to you and our listeners. Ben, we're going to talk probably this week and again next week about the North Carolina Planned Community Act. This is, Wes is going to give us some detail on exactly what this app, where it stands and where it's applicable here in a minute or two. We have the statute here with us this morning. But just to give our listeners a little bit of background, you know, community living now, Ben, is such a popular and such a statistically prevalent way in which we all live our lives. Even if for some reason our primary home is a more traditional in a subdivision, lot and block in a subdivision or a rural property, so many folks then have, you know, a condominium or an apartment or a second home. And so community living is very statistically prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
I a lot of times call it living by a democracy or living within a democracy.
Right.
Where, of course, you know, majority are going to rule on so many types of issues, from your flagpoles and basketball courts to parking your boats in the backyard. The list is kind of endless. So with that background, we get a lot of questions about living in a planned community, and so we want to introduce this statute to our listeners over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and I guess we start with some definitions there, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Ben. Before we get into the Planned Community Act, you know, we want our listeners to understand basically what kind of documents we're dealing with when a homeowners association is set up, subdivision is set up. These are usually planned communities. In general, a planned community, as it relates to the Planned Community Act, is basically, you know, one of these homeowners associations where lots are owned.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The Planned Community Act actually accepts out like condos and those type things. It really deals with your traditional, if you live here in Carteret County, maybe your traditional Brandywines or your, some of your subdivisions up and down Highway 24, that type situation with multiple lots. And some of the documents that we deal with in these homeowners associations, of course, would be the governing documents with regard to the real estate, first of all. Those can be referred to as the declarations or the covenants. Those would be restrictive covenants, as denoted in the law. And basically what those documents do is they restrict the use of individuals' property.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, these covenants or declarations have to be on record, have to be in your chain of title. Get the question all the time, do not have to be on your deed.
Mm-hmm.
They're just in your chain of title so that they were recorded before you purchased your property. And therefore, you're subject to those declarations, or those covenants. So as Cecil and I have said many times before, when you're looking at buying a piece of property, no matter where it is, you know, ask the question, is this in an association? Is it subject to covenants or declarations? Because even though it may not say anything about that on your deed, you still would potentially be subject to those restrictions.
Okay.
Now, of course, the purpose of those restrictions is to create some uniformity among property owners and to give some assurances to property owners that the respective properties will be maintained to a certain standard, a certain degree. You know, quick example might be, maybe we have a square footage restriction so that, you can't build a house less than 2,000 square feet,
mm-hmm.
or less than 1,500 square feet because, maybe we're an average of 2,500, 3,000, 3,500 square foot subdivision. Well, we don't want necessarily, a 600 square foot shack in our next door neighbor,
mm-hmm. Right.
It's
right.
Not necessarily a shack, but a lot smaller than everyone else's house.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to create that uniformity. There might be restrictions regarding the color of your house or materials used on your house.
Mm-hmm.
There could be restrictions regarding what you have to do in order to build in the subdivision. You have to make application with plans to the Architectural Control Committee. They have to approve it before you can begin.
Mm-hmm.
All of these type things. So these restrictions are all, you know, very, very important. Again, as Cecil said, basketball goals, boats in the driveway, sure. Trailers, parking on the street.
Also, as Cecil said, right. The list is endless. I mean, it can be
correct.
Any number of things, and especially with historic areas around here, too. You're a whole nother shade.
That's right. We also deal with, of course, the bylaws. Now, a lot of times folks get confused about, you know, the covenants and the bylaws.
Right.
The bylaws, with any corporation, you're going to have bylaws, mm-hmm. whether it's a homeowners association or not. So the bylaws basically is the guidebook for the corporation itself as to, you know, what authority the officers have, how officers are, you know, elected, when we have members, or membership meetings,
mm-hmm.
What notice is required, those type of things. Sometimes we see an attempt to put restrictions in bylaws, and that's really not the right place to put restrictions on real estate, because bylaws are usually a little easier to amend. You can put some
right.
language in there, but that doesn't necessarily bind property owners because it's not of title. The bylaws are...
And the next board could change all that.
That's right. That's right. So what we like to see, and the purpose of the documents would be, okay, we set up the corporation with the articles of incorporation and then the bylaws. And the bylaws tells us how to operate as a corporation so mm-hmm. that we're fair to our members.
Right.
We give our members notice with regard to the meetings. It sets forth what the voting rights are, so on and so forth. That's how we... The quorum, how many people we need at the meeting mm-hmm. in order to, you know, have a vote,
mm-hmm.
those type things. And then in addition to the bylaws, then we have the document that then deals with the real estate, which is what I just referred to, the declaration, or the covenants.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the host of documents that we normally deal with in homeowners association, situations or questions.
And homeowners associations do some other things like assessments, right? I mean,
yeah, assessments, that's usually what gets people's dander up a little bit.
Yeah, you bet.
Absolutely.
And that's, you know, a great question and a great issue to bring up when we're talking about buying a piece of property.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you may look at the covenants and not really see anything too objectionable in the covenants themselves. But it is always a good idea to ask the question, are there any pending special assessments?
Mm-hmm.
Those could be because of the sewage treatment facility
right.
needs to be revamped.
Right.
It could be because the roads or some of the roads need to be revamped.
Mm-hmm.
Might ask questions as to whether there is a road fund.
Mm-hmm.
Is this association organized to the point where we have set up such a fund so we don't have to assess everyone, you know, $1,000 or so to have our roads paved, which is, of course,
right.
Very expensive.
Yeah.
Could be because there's pending litigation, and
mm-hmm.
maybe there's attorney's fees that have to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these kind of things can be assessed among the property owners. So when you're looking at buying, you know, a piece of property that's in an association, these type of questions are very appropriate, and we would recommend you know, those potential buyers to ask those questions.
Right. So. And you know, most of the real estate agents that we've dealt with, you know, they recognize that, and they encourage people to ask those questions. I mean, you may move into an area, for example, that the homeowners that's all state maintained roads, so the homeowners association
that's right.
doesn't own them. So
that's correct.
So Ben, where we are is that. The legislature felt it in the best interest of all of us that there be some uniformity
mm-hmm.
with regard to community living. And of course, the first section, if you will, of chapter 47F about where is this act applicable. Is a fascinating section, probably one that everyone has to kind of go to law school in order to understand. But the bottom line is that this first section of which is referred to as applicability.
Right.
Let me explain it in this way. First of all, anyone at any time can come forward in the past for any number of years and make the Planned Community Act applicable. They may elect to make the provisions of the chapter applicable. Mm-hmm. And so if they get together and by affirmative vote, 67% of the members elect to make this act applicable,
right,
then it's going to be applicable.
Okay.
Otherwise, the act is going to apply to any subdivisions that were created with any communities, rather, planned communities that are created after January 1 of 1999.
Mm-hmm. So not that long ago, really.
Which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
You know, we can imagine, let's just round that off to 2000. It is 1999, but to put it in context, mm-hmm. 2000, by that time we really were, if we think about it, very much the 70s, the 80s, the 90s had taken hold, and there were just, you know, just a complete, explosion mm-hmm. of planned communities in those mm-hmm. decades. So if we're after January 1 of 1999, then this act is going to apply. But yet, we've got to go one step further, says the legislature, and mm-hmm. say that with regard to certain items, like, for instance, American state flags and political signs, procedures for fines and suspensions of planned community privileges, meetings, assessments for common expenses, those apply no matter when the community, the planned community was created.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Unless the articles of incorporation expressly prohibit it.
Okay. So again, now you're back to the articles of incorporation.
Right.
And then you're,
right. But so. It, let's face it, it would be unlikely for an article of incorporation that was in existence prior to the Planned Community Act to exclude the Planned Community Act.
Right. Right.
But that would also apply to the, to it specifically addressing mm-hmm. a particular interest with a particular issue
right.
with great particularity.
And as we have seen with flags and political
and
signs.
And addressing it yeah. head on yeah. prior to 1999.
Okay, we'll have more to come in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, and your calls are welcome. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station, welcoming your calls to it, 800-818-2255 or one of our local numbers, talking about homeowners associations, kind of laying that foundation that's out there.
Right, Ben. We've been talking about the Planned Community Act, and really the provision that gets most attention that we deal with most, especially as attorneys, mm-hmm. is under 47F-3-107.1.
Okay.
It's like a radio station.
Take notes.
Yeah. But this procedure is, in part of the Planned Community Act, is defined as procedures for fines and suspension of planned community privileges or services.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what this statute does is it sets forth a due process procedure that we have to go through before we can impose a fine on a property owner for failure to comply with the covenants,
right?
Or before we can take away some of their privileges or rights as a property owner, such as the right to vote or potentially maybe the right to use some type of common area. Maybe there's a swimming pool right that comes with ownership,
mm-hmm.
something like that. You can't just, as a homeowners association, write a letter and say you can't vote or you can't
right.
use the pool if you're subject to the Planned Community Act. The Planned Community Act allows and requires us to go through this due process procedure. Now, the way this works, and we have dealt with it on many different occasions on both sides of the fence and mm-hmm. gone to the Court of Appeals on issues with this, so I've kind of got it coming out of my ears, to be frank with you. I've lived it and breathed it and read all the cases
mm-hmm.
In North Carolina on this, but basically the way this works is that in the event that there's a property owner that is, let's say, violating the covenants in some way.
Right.
Okay. You know, maybe they are parking a boat in their driveway, or maybe they put up an outbuilding that's not allowed, or mm-hmm. just any of these things that are not allowed. Then the association through its board of directors would then contact the individual and let them know that they're in violation. Give them an opportunity to correct the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Let them know that, in the event they don't correct the problem, let's say within a reasonable amount of time, then we're going to have a hearing. And that hearing is for the purpose of making the determination as to, number one, whether you're in breach, and number two, whether a fine will be imposed. You have to give notice mm-hmm. of what the charge is. What do we think you're doing that is in violation? Mm-hmm. Okay. So then in the event that doesn't correct the problem, or the property owner doesn't correct the problem voluntarily, then we have that hearing. Now that hearing may be before the executive board, which is just your board of directors,
mm-hmm.
or an adjudicatory panel, which is just a panel to set up basically a committee that's appointed to hear these type matters for the homeowners association. Mm-hmm. Board members can't be on the adjudicatory panel. That's specifically in the statute. But mm-hmm. in the event the adjudicatory or the executive board hears the matter, then they're all board members. So
right.
it just depends
right.
on how the association has it set up.
So they could be set up, if they're set up with a panel, then
right.
they have to use that.
They use that. Yes, they have to use that. Mm-hmm. And no board members may be on that, because I think it doesn't state this specifically in the Planning Community Act, but there's an appeal right.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that if we have an adjudicatory panel in place and we mm-hmm. appeal, we want new blood hearing it.
Right.
You know, we don't gotcha. Want to have someone who was on the board also on the adjudicatory panel at the same time.
Okay.
But I can tell you, most homeowners associations don't have adjudicatory panels.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them just have the board consider these matters. At the hearing, the alleged violator has the right to put on evidence to show why he or she is not in violation of the covenants.
Mm-hmm.
And then at that hearing, the decision is made as to whether, number one, there's a violation, and number two, whether there will be a fine. Now, the fine is capped at $100 per day,
mm-hmm.
cannot be more than that. But the court really won't get
That's
into
still pretty significant money.
$100 a day, absolutely.
Yeah.
The court won't get into the reasonableness of the fine as long as it's not over $100, you know, mm-hmm. a day. That's not really the court's position with regard to that. And then that the property owner then needs to be put on notice of the decision. Doesn't state whether that notice has to be verbally or mm-hmm. written or whatever.
It does, just have to be told.
You have to be put on notice, and then the fine does not begin to accrue until 5 days later. So
mm-hmm.
basically there's another 5 day gap there
to fix it.
Fix the problem.
Yeah. Now here's a typical scenario, one I'm aware of. In fact, if somebody builds a shed on mm-hmm. their back, a yard, it's not conforming to what, or they didn't get permission, or it's supposedly out of conformity with what would be allowed. And they're told of all these things. They come to the panel and say, yeah, but my neighbor has the exact same shed.
Right.
But he didn't get fined.
Right. A couple things about that. Usually your covenants are going to have some language in them that state that, you know, previous violations, you know, do not serve to release you from compliance with
right.
the covenants.
Right.
So, and
two wrongs don't make a right.
That's right. That's right. And it doesn't necessarily feel or smell just right, but, you know, think about this. I mean, that other shed could have been built 15 years ago when we had an entirely different board who was maybe mm-hmm. very casual. Maybe the Planning Community Act wasn't something we even
right.
dealt with at all at that point in time.
It may not even been a neighborhood.
Right. But just because one person, you know, violates the covenants doesn't mean we just throw them in the trash and forget they're there.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the first thing. The second thing would be that homeowners associations through their board, you know, they don't have powers under their declarations and covenants forever,
mm-hmm.
Meaning certain things that are done on people's property. Well, a statute of limitations begins to run with regard to these.
Right.
And typically, the statute with regard to improvements to your property that have not been addressed is under, and this is a legal term, the incorporeal hereditament statute, which
wow.
is a 6-year deal. Once you've had that outbuilding up for 6 years,
mm-hmm.
then the association really is not in a position to be able to go back and say, hey, you know, here we are. You breached the covenants.
Right. So this is
you
a
know,
statute
we're
limitation.
We're going to have our hearing. Yeah, you got that statute of limitations. So, I mean, you need to take that into consideration as a property owner, too, under that scenario.
Okay, take a short break. We'll come back with more here. Remember, you can go to the website, too, at harvellandcollins.com and listen to past shows. That's harvellandcollins.com and find out lots of other information, too, including newsletters and the like, and the contact information for Harvell and Collins Attorneys of Law. And we'll have more on this in just a bit. We're talking about homeowners associations with Cecil and Wes from Harvell and Collins, and talking about some of those issues that come up. And I know that a lot of people have had run-ins with this homeowners association, but also many live just fine. I mean, and the rules seem to be applying equally and fairly to all. But it really, a lot of it comes down to whether or not you're involved with the board, right?
Yeah, I would say so. And also, Ben, understanding the documents that you're subject to.
Right.
I think that what happens more times than not when we have issues or run-ins between property owners and the executive board is maybe the property owner gets ahead of himself a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the property owner goes ahead and starts building or starts painting that house or starts doing things without really just seeking the approval. Most homeowners associations are pretty well organized where maybe they send a phone list out. You know, this is the person to call regarding
right.
flowers and beautification. This mm-hmm. is the person to call regarding construction. This is the person to call regarding, you know, declarations and covenants. Or just call the president if you don't know who to call and you'll get directed to the right person. So, you know, we would recommend to be involved, not necessarily be involved in the government. That's not necessary as a property owner,
mm-hmm.
but know what restrictions there are, and before you just stick your neck out there by doing whatever improvement or change or whatever you're going to do to your property, you know, investigate a little bit,
mm-hmm.
get the approval that you need. And maybe you don't need approval for the particular thing, but hey, one phone call might resolve yeah. any future headaches.
You mentioned about appeals. When decisions are made, do they get outside the bounds of the board and get appealed into courts?
They do, absolutely. The court will look at these, and we've got a pretty long list of cases in North Carolina where the court has looked at the imposition of fines and the reasonableness and specificity as regard to restrictions. Was there enough clarity and specificity in the restriction to impose it, those type things. So we do have a lot of cases with regard to that. I did want to mention also under the Plain Community Act, when we're talking about these procedures for fines and suspension of services, in the event there is a fine, then the association has a right to foreclose on property in order to collect the fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that foreclosure statute does allow for collection of costs and attorney's fees for that. So that can be, you know, pretty significant once you go through a full, you know, blown judicial foreclosure. In order to collect on fines. So mm-hmm. we'd like to, of course, as a property owner, avoid that at all costs. So let's, you know, talk to our association, talk to our property manager, whoever the person is, whoever your contact is, before you bring liability, you know, upon yourself with regard to that.
I know I think it's legislation that's being proposed for this year is to limit the number of investment units a single entity can own inside of a condo complex that has right. a single property, homeowners association, because they go under, then they lose their dues.
And you know, there's also a lot of discussion up in Raleigh with the General Assembly, the Real Property Bar with the North Carolina Bar Association regarding this Plain Community Act and regarding homeowners associations in an attempt to, I guess, avoid some of the problems we've seen over the past 10 or 15 years with some of these cases that have gone up to the Court of Appeals,
right.
these kind of things
yeah.
that we're trying to stay away from the disputes.
If you want to find out more, you can contact the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law at 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City, 252-726-9050, 726-9050.